welcome back to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep minute by minute into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I am one of your hosts, Zach.
And I'm John.
And we are back on this still gloomy Sunday, aka Tuesday episode for everyone out there. Hello and welcome back.
It's still shitty. I'm still happy.
It's still great though, man. Yeah. Come on. Listen, we're not being assaulted by the sun. We've had we're getting back into Atlanta weather now. We've had an entire week of cool temperatures.
No, we've already given people the Atlanta weather.
Yeah, but it's a different day, John. And I'm so happy. My place is not sweating with humidity.
Mm-hmm. But you haven't been up in the sky.
I've not been up in the sky. I've not been flying for the past couple of weeks because my instructor, who shall not be named, is on a family vacation to Europe. So fuck him. No, much deserved family vacation. Coming back soon though, so I'll be up in the air again soon.
How are you gonna segue this one?
I don't think I'm gonna.
Okay.
That is not what we're here to talk about, John. It's not what the people pay to hear out of us. So let's talk about Dune. Let's get through this minute because a little birdie told me yesterday, and the little birdie's name is John.
Yeah.
That we got some beeves coming up.
We have some beeves. Pray tell, what minute would we be discussing?
We are talking about minute 146 through 147.
Where do we leave off, Zach?
Well, we left off right where we left off, John.
All right, smart ass.
Specifically, is where Paul was responding to the Emperor, where he said, "How can you be so sure the great?" And as Paul continues in this minute, "Houses are here for me. They may be curious to hear my side of the story, don't you think?" And okay, sure, yeah, fine. So the whole quote is, "How can you be so?" How can you be so sure that the great houses are here for me? They may be curious to hear my side of the story, don't you think? So even if the latter part of his question were true,
mm-hmm.
they would still be here for him.
Sure.
So it's a very dumbly worded question.
Yeah. Dumbly worded question or dumbly worded answer?
Answer, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, because the question, what?
So if they're here to arrest him, he responded
to a statement with a question, and then
which is fine. Jesus did it all the time.
Yeah,
but if
so, now we're just equating Messiah figures. Got it.
Well, I mean, hey, listen, if shoe fits. So all I'm saying is that if they're here to like arrest him, mm-hmm. or they're here to hear his side of the story, they're still here for him.
Sure.
So what do you mean, Paul?
Well, he says what he means. I am Paul Atreides, son of, he says, Leto Atreides.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about Arrakis. I wanted to talk about this. We've gotten, I think the main point of interaction that we've gotten from our lovely fans
mm-hmm.
Has been around pronunciations.
And how inconsistent we are.
Well, yes, that's always the context, I guess.
Sure.
But my response is always, well, the movie is far from consistent anyways.
Sure.
And I think this is a perfect example of that. Now.
Is Leto's name ever...
That is exactly what I wanted to figure
out. No, it is. It is because Leto himself says, this is Leto Atreides.
So he says Leto.
Yeah.
Where the fuck is Leto coming from?
Fuck if I know.
Now, I will say, you know, there's always this thing that happens. Like when you're reading a book, you pronounce the words the way that you want to in your head.
In your head, you see Harkonnen and you just think Harkonnen.
Right, right.
Well, you do, not me.
Everyone's different. Everyone pronounces it a little bit different. I don't think I ever for a moment said Leto.
No, it was always Leto.
But I guess, okay, if we're going to draw like a real world example, the famous musician Jared Leto would say Leto. Maybe that's what Timothy Chalamet is thinking in his head at this point.
Jared Leto's just in the corner in his fucking shitty ass Joker makeup.
Sure. Well, he's got to go. He's got a reservation at Dorsia at 6.
How do you get a reservation at Dorsia?
Yeah, that threw me for a little bit of a loop. So yes, that is the quote that Paul says is, "I am Paul Atreides, son of Leto Atreides, Duke of Arrakis, ... Gurney, send a warning to all ships. If the Great Houses attack, our atomics will obliterate all spice fields."
You forgot the Gurney, my lord.
sure.
Yes. Going back to what Paul said earlier in the movie, after Gurney had been re-entered into Paul's life, and Paul was in his tent with Chani as she was adjusting technology with the reminder of, he who can destroy a thing has the real power over it.
Yeah.
This is...
And here's another thing that we're missing from the books. Like, they go into this again. Because notably, there are two members of the guild present with the Emperor's cadre.
Yep.
Specifically two navigators. Or at least like...
Lower tier
navigators. Yeah, proto-navigators, whatever. But they are able to see into the future. They are able to, you know, have that limited prescience. And Paul talks directly to them at this point and says, you know, he's basically like, do you believe that I can, I have control over the spice fields? Or do you believe that I can destroy them? I think is what he says. And they're like, yeah, but please don't.
We really need that. Please don't.
Yeah. And they're like, you would doom us all to a slow death and, you know, whatever. And that's where he gets the thing that he's also mentioned a few times in the books. Like, he who has control over a thing has the power to destroy it.
Yep.
And which is the point that he's getting to here. He says it basically very succinctly in the movie. But that's kind of a thing you don't really have to put it together because it's still spelled out, but it's a little bit slightly more obfuscated in the book. But we do get to see the fear and panic from the guild members.
Mm-hmm.
And they are the ones who send this message out in the books, not Gurney.
Yep.
There's also a dropped plot line of a captured Sardaukar officer who they, I think, is the initial, like, go tell all the houses to like, they're already in orbit, but yeah, go tell everyone to get down here. Yeah, that comes from a Sardaukar officer.
Tell everyone to get down here, but also chill the fuck out.
Yeah.
And I can't help but be, I don't want to say mad, but I can't help but be disappointed that we don't have the presence of navigators here, because we have seen members of the Spacing Guild in Denis's films before.
Yeah.
We have a design and a costume, even if they just reused the same one and just had two of them just standing there that Paul just kind of like briefly acknowledges or whatever and just like looks at them as he says, I'll fucking nuke the spice fields. Like,
they could be standing in the background like Daft Punk just with their dumb helmets on.
I like Daft Punk's helmets.
Yeah, they're cool. They're really cool. But like, they would be silly.
Sure. Yeah, I don't understand. And if we're talking about things that we're missing, I'm going to get into my beef. Stephen McKinley Henderson was in the room when they were filming this. He was standing in this crowd, and then they just cut Thufir Hawat out.
Yeah, I have no...
There were whole scenes of him, like, that were shot with him and Stellan Skarsgård together, like, doing the whole thing that happens between Thufir and Vladimir Harkonnen, and they just are like, nah.
Do you think it was a time thing? That's really the only thing that I can think of.
No, why would it have been a time? Oh, you mean the length of the movie thing?
Yeah, length of the movie, because this movie is already a long movie. Like, Chris Knife but to your throat, like, if you're going to cut something out, you have to make those tough decisions, right?
Yeah, but they could have done it in a way where they could have, like, shown Thufir Hawat as a prisoner among the rest of the Atreides prisoners on Gedi Prime.
But it's not just this scene that... Yeah, okay, I hear what you're saying. It would have had to have been multiple other scenes throughout the movie to give you that storyline. I'm not saying I agree with them cutting it out. I vehemently disagree with them cutting it out.
Yeah.
But it is not just a, let's cut him out of this scene and be done with it. It is a whole storyline thread that they had to pull out.
Sure. I think there's a way that they could have done it where they could have shown him as a captured slave being dragged around with Vladimir Harkonnen.
Yeah. I don't know. It feels like an all or nothing thing to me. Like,
sure.
You have to show him in the story that is presented in the book.
Yeah.
Like, you have to include that narrative through line of him actively, like, working against the Atreides, you know, for the Harkonnens. And then there's the whole, like, well, why would he do that? And, oh, he's being drugged. And, you know, the Baron's providing him the antidote or whatever. And then there's the last
little, like... And then there's the cat that's duct taped to the rat.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that alone is like 5 minutes screen time.
Yeah, so, no, I mean, I get it.
If you have to pull something out, that is something that does not impact Denis' story.
Sure.
All that much. It's a travesty, but it does not impact the overall story that this movie is telling and allows you to cut your movie for time.
Yeah.
It sucks.
It does. It really does. But it is really a logical
choice. And yeah. I think Amentat would appreciate that.
Amentat would. And I understand it. But like, there are scenes in this movie where there is a Stephen McKinley Henderson sized space between other people.
Yeah.
And like, you can very clearly tell that they just like removed him. There's behind the scenes photos of him in all of this, and like in like spoilers for the credits, but we're not going to be doing minute by minute on the credits, so it's fine. Like in the Denis would like to thank section, it's like Tanya LaPointe, who's his wife,
mm-hmm.
and then like his kids, and then it's Stephen McKinley Henderson and Tim Blake Nelson. Yeah.
Mm.
So it's like his friends and family, and then Stephen McKinley Henderson, Tim Blake Nelson.
The two people that he kind of shafted on this movie.
That he hard shafted on this movie, yeah.
Damn. Yeah, it's a damn shame,
man. I hope they got paid.
I was about to say it, and I was also thinking it. Yeah, I hope they still got paid for this, because yeah. Being attached to this kind of movie is a big deal.
Yeah.
So, yes, that is a damn shame.
Yeah. Not having Thufir Hawat is
because this would be his death scene here.
Yeah.
There's this whole like arc of Thufir being the last like weapon of the Baron. He's been, for lack of a better term, coerced into killing Paul.
Sure.
Paul calls him out of the crowd of the Emperor's like cadre and puts him on blast, basically. And
just, I got DMs, motherfucker. Look at this.
Well, no, in a much more respectful way, though, he's like, Thufir Hawat, you've been loyal to us forever.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, whatever you need to do right now, I will allow you to do it. And he's basically calling his bluff.
Yeah.
And saying, and not even like with subtext, he says, if you need to take my life, take it.
Try me, bitch.
Yeah. And Thufir Hawat, you know, even though he's had all this conditioning and, you know, been through all the Harkonnen ordeals, he's just like, yeah, you know, you don't dedicate your life to a family to let it crumble at the very end.
Yeah.
And he shows him the needle that he was supposed to stab him with, basically another Gamja bar.
Yeah.
And he's been without his poison antidote for so long that this is his last act. He shows the needle to Paul and he says, I'm not doing that. Get that shit away from me. And then he dies. He just fucking dies. And that is the end. That's a wrap on Through Fear. Could have been great.
Yeah.
Could have been great.
And
again, this is more evidence for a director's cut, which we will never get.
Yeah. And that makes me really sad because, like, damn, they could have done a lot of cool shit between, you know, Hazimir Fenring and Thufir Hawat, and like obviously like what they could have done with Alia.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let us not dwell.
No, we still have a lot more of this minute
We're about 10 seconds into this minute.
Yep.
So Paul gives his message to Gurney, or he gives his command to Gurney to send a warning. After he does this, there's like a murmur through the crowd. Irulan looks genuinely astonished that he's even suggesting what he's suggesting. And we get kind of a round robin of reaction shots. Yeah.
Shaddam just goes, you're out of your mind. And Fade immediately is just like, he's bluffing. And then Gaius Helen Moheim tries to be the voice of reason here.
Yeah.
Consider what you're about to do, Paul Atreides. And then you and I saw this movie in IMAX.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And listening to Paul use the voice in the most powerful, like, time that we've ever seen the voice used, just yell silence at her with mm-hmm. IMAX audio.
Yeah. It was big.
Oh.
It was big. Now, mind you, he learned the voice from Jessica, which is a much less refined refined method of the voice.
He didn't very have much Margot Fenring as a teacher, right. But I think
it's appropriate here.
Yeah.
It is very much akin to what they did in Prophecy with it's very just raw.
Yeah. But I mean, in this moment, that's the right way I think it would be mm-hmm. done here, because Paul does not want any of her shit. And this is shut the fuck up, sit down.
Yeah.
And I'm going to make you sit down by being so forceful with the voice that it physically knocks you back and sends you reeling, and Fade's going to get horny about it when he sees it happen.
It does. It literally knocks her off her feet. And I put in my notes, Fade raises his eyebrows.
Non-existent eyebrows.
Yeah, eyebrows in question mark. In quotation marks there.
His Neanderthal brow.
Yeah, I mean, it's wherever his eyebrows should have been, that's what raises. As if to say, well, that's a neat trick.
Oh. Because Fade's not unfamiliar with the voice, right?
Like, I think he's unfamiliar with his flavor of voice.
Right, and that's... Yeah. I think this is more of like, oh, I want to learn how to do that kind of look on his face.
Eat your heart out, Fade. Now, Gaius Helen Moheim, as she is regaining her footing, she whispers, abomination. Which I have...
Wrong!
Yeah.
I think that was the first thing that you and I said to each other when we left the movie was, what the fuck was that?
Yeah. Okay, so she would know what that word means.
Yeah. Abomination is not a word that is used lightly in Dune. It's a
very
Dune.
Specific thing.
Yes.
So it makes me think that in this telling of Dune, abomination is just like a slur that they use for anything that they don't like the Bene Gesserit specifically do not like.
Sure.
So yeah, you can't just go tossing hard A's around everywhere, you know?
Shaddam with the hard F's and Gaius Helen Moheim with the hard A's. But the thing is like Gaius Helen Moheim, if that was the interpretation of abomination in Denis' movies, she would have referred to Paul as the as an abomination when she was scolding Jessica for teaching him the way,
right,
in part one.
Right. And okay, and if she's already raised the level of calling Paul an abomination, what the fuck is she going to do when she meets Olive? There's not like abomination second level.
Yeah. It's no Super Saiyan 2, Super Saiyan 3 to abomination.
Right. Yeah. So
speaking and throughout all of this, yeah. Jessica still shit-eating grin all the way through.
I wrote, I can't help but read in her face like she's thinking, just like, yeah, take that, you raggedy-ass bitch. she is looking smug in her chair.
Take that, Mom.
Yeah. Gurney comes back.
Yep.
And he lets us know that the message has been sent. Thank you, Gurney.
And Fremen in the background are adjusting technology.
Of course. Technology
exists. Anytime technology is being adjusted, I feel more obligation to call it out.
Yes. It's needed.
Yeah.
If you're not adjusting technology, the technology won't work.
That's how it works.
So, the Emperor whispers, "As servants of the Imperium, you will bow at my feet." And Paul, very angrily, goes, "Your feet?" So Paul's not a foot guy. He says, "You'll be lucky to keep your head." He looks over at Urlon, and in such an A to Z moment, he goes, "I'll take the hand of your daughter."
And then Chani in the background's like, "What the fuck?"
Yeah, well, Chani's super offended. And when I heard this, and again, like, I haven't watched this movie in totality in a long time, I was just like, "Whoa, buddy, you're really speed running this whole thing, bud." You don't threaten to kill her father and then ask her to marry her. That wasn't really an ask.
Yeah, demand. That was to marry her. I'm gonna marry your daughter.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm kind of understanding why they refer to Paul as like an upstart duke and a yokel at points in the book. This kid is very presumptuous.
Yeah. And he's given Chani the old one too.
Yeah. Which I think I said this yesterday. I love you as long as I breathe, or whatever his quote was.
I will love you as long as I breathe. Yeah. Yeah.
That could have been sweet if 60 seconds from now you weren't going to, I guess, propose marriage to another girl.
Demand marriage.
Thank you. Yes. So could have been a nice thing to say. Immediately ruined.
The least he could have done has been like, "Look, here's what's going to have to happen. Just so you know, I don't give a shit about this bitch."
And that's what he does in the books.
Yeah.
He has these conversations beforehand. He's not some weird enigmatic figure that's just like brooding in the corner as he's portrayed in the movie.
Yeah.
He tells people what he's doing. Not everything, but he tells them enough to where they don't freak the fuck out. Yeah. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm getting worked up.
No, but it plays to the ending that Denis has for this movie, which when we get there, we'll have a lot to talk about. But anyways, that's it for this minute.
That is where the minute ends.
Yeah. Yes.
So we've gone on long. So let's get back tomorrow.
Yep.
And continue this conversation. And it's going to be a lot of looking this next minute.
There's a lot of looking all over the place this week. Speaking of looking, you can look at more Dune Minute content online. You can find us on Blue Sky at DuneMinute.com. And you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com to get in touch with us that way. We will be back tomorrow with another episode of the Dune Minute. We'll see you then.
See ya.